A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 312. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Robin Redbreast. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is one of the earliest of BBC's plays for today, the Play for Today strand, which ran from 1970 all the way through 1984. And it's also one of the earliest entries in this folk horror genre that we like to come back to look at some strange and different things once in a while. This is a 77-minute production that was originally broadcast in color, but what we have on DVD is a black and white telerecording, which is all that exists at this point.
Yes, it is. A shame we don't get the color version. But yeah, black and white sometimes helps make these shows seem more spooky when we watch them from the future, Brian.
Yes, indeed.
And this one dates back, it was 1970, I think this one comes from, right when, as you say, Play for Today started. So Nora, the television script editor we mentioned last time, the central character played by Anna Cropper, she's trying to find herself in her country home. Some bad things have happened to her in her life and she's trying to recover and rebuild, and she's retreated to this restored farmhouse. But things don't go quite so well because there's a series of unsettling events which seems to set her at odds with the locals from the village. As we mentioned last time, she has some vivid nightmares. There's some weird events going on, and they are all very interested in the village in her unexpected pregnancy, it seems, and much seems to be made about that.
Yes, and her telephone line has failed, it's not working, and her car has also run into problems, and it isn't working either. So she is increasingly cut off from her friends from London, who we meet in the show as well, and it sort of cuts off her support and her connection to the outside. And events seem to be moving towards a potentially gruesome, mysterious kind of conclusion.
They certainly do. And imagine you're back in 1970 watching this in colour on the BBC and your power goes off 10 minutes before the end and you don't get to see the end of this show. And of course, there's no internet to go and complain to and look up what happens. You have to wait or maybe write to the Radio Times in the hope of a repeat, which of course happened 2 months later. But goodness knows what viewers thought at the time, Brian. It must have really left them in the lurch.
Yeah, that would certainly be a bizarre way for things to go with this.
So Robin Redbreast does seem to fit into this sort of subgenre of creepy 70s British television, because interestingly, when you look for it on Amazon over here, it pops up, and then it pops up two other DVDs as recommended to buy with this one. Two other plays from today, in fact, from this time period, and they are Redshift by Alan Garner in 1978, which we covered in episodes 202 and 203, and another play for today from 1974, I believe, called Pender's Fen, which, who knows, we may get to at some point. And they all seem to deal with this clash between the old and the new, possibly between the rural and the sophisticated urban ways. And so they make an interesting companion piece in a way, I think, Brian.
Yes, and it also sort of goes right to that folk horror genre that we've been talking about. And I'll add a couple of other things to the list that were not Play for Today, but also sort of really go to that folk horror genre. One is The Owl Service, which is also from Alan Garner, who wrote Redshift. And the other, leaving television and looking at film, of course, is The Wicker Man from the 1970s, which did a folk horror type tale in a very memorable way.
Yes, it is the folk horror film or text, dare I say, that around the whole genre is built in a way. Everything seems to lead up to, or perhaps lead from, The Wicker Man. Powerful effect that had on audiences. A great film with fascinating performances, as you say, by Christopher Lee and Edward Woodward and others. What an impact that had. But this whole sort of subgenre of folk horror is interesting stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And these television productions that we're talking about all had a reputation for being somewhat opaque and being very memorable and sort of standout television productions from the 1970s. And it's sort of in retrospect that critics and academics have started defining this folk horror genre. And Robin Redbreast is often mentioned as a very early television example of that.
Certainly is. Like yourself and many of our listeners, Brian, I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I've recently been listening to a podcast called The Evolution of Horror, which has been examining different subgenres. And they've recently done a folk horror season. And they did indeed spend one episode covering these weird 70s shows. They also included some of the Ghost Story for Christmas shows that we've loved so much, that some of them fit in there as well. So, yeah, fascinating. Of course, Mark Gatiss, who's a favourite of ours, spoke about it in his TV documentaries he made about the history of horror. And that prompted a lot of the interest in some of this stuff. And it's quite wonderful to see a sort of moody black and white version that we've been looking at here in Robin Redbreast.
Yes, absolutely. And there definitely has been this sort of re-examination of some of these things from the 70s, sort of looking at them in a new light from a slightly different perspective.
And I'm going to mention another series, which who knows, we also may get to in the future, which would make a good companion piece, because there was a series from, I think, 2 years after this one, 1972, a show called Dead of Night, from which only three episodes survive. And one of them is a play called The Exorcism, starring Anna Cropper, the same actress, again set in a farmhouse in the countryside that a middle-class couple have renovated and are using as their sort of country retreat. And that would make a very good companion piece alongside Robin Redbreast, another fascinating bit of television from the early 70s.
Oh, interesting.
And there's a John Bowen play. He didn't write The Exorcism, but he wrote the episode of Dead of Night called A Woman Sobbing, which has Anna Massey in it. And that fortunately survives and is on the Dead of Night DVD. And that's terrific as well. So hopefully we'll get to those at some point. You remember when we covered Nigel Neal's Beasts series, that they included on the DVD another one-shot play he'd done called Moraine?
Oh, yes.
With, again, the sort of smart, intellectual, urban vet coming up against some weird stuff in the countryside. And it's already a very bleak 1970s countryside, as I remember. And that somehow, I thought there were similarities there. And instead of the great Bernard Hepton in Robin Redbreast, I think there, am I right in thinking we had the marvellous Bernard Lee?
We did.
Yes, M himself.
The original M from the James Bond films, and a wonderful actor who we've seen in a number of things, yes.
Yeah, so there's plenty of stuff to read and watch, read about and watch from the 70s in this weird little folk horror genre.
Very interesting. So we should get into some of our own thoughts about Robin Redbreast and review it a little bit. So, Eamon, what did you like about Robin Redbreast?
Well, as our listeners can probably tell, I'm quite excited about this one. I liked a lot about Robin Redbreast. I thought, let's start with the performances. I think Cropper, Bagmore and the great Bernard Hepton are all fantastic in this. I think Anna Cropper's, you know, performance as this smart city woman who is increasingly out of her depth in the country as these weird things happen to her is great. I'll talk about her again if we ever get to cover Dead of Night. But yeah, she's terrific. The other performances are also, I think, pretty good. The chap who plays Rob is suitably weird, I think, and I think that's part of his character. It's a slightly odd performance, but he's a slightly odd character, and I think that fits. So yeah, performance-wise, I thought great stuff. What about yourself?
Yeah, the performances were definitely good. I also like the idea of Anna Cropper's character of taking this sort of independent professional woman who's very self-assured, very much a late 1960s type of character. You know, that was, that sort of character was becoming popular around then, being sort of put into this uncomfortable position and pulled into this more 1970s folk horror type of situation, and giving us this sort of juxtaposition of the new city life and the more traditional village life, with, yes, some stereotyping involved there, but nevertheless, the juxtaposition between those lifestyles and bringing that character into the situation, that was really interesting, and I think it worked really well.
Okay. What about the look and the feel and the sound of the production? I point out it's slightly difficult in a way to comment because we're looking at a black and white tele recording instead of the original colour broadcast. What did you feel about that?
I thought it worked reasonably well. It didn't do anything as memorable as some of the Christmas ghost stories that we've looked at did, but I thought it worked.
It's nice to have, you know, knowing what we know now from the DVD booklet, it's nice to know that it's the actual house, or at least the exterior shots are, of where all this, some of this weird stuff actually happened to John Bowen, the writer.
Yes, that is interesting.
I suppose we should say that, like folk horror, a lot of folk horror, it is an enigmatic show. Folk horror, I think, often builds on atmosphere and posing mysteries which are not necessarily going to be solved or neatly explained at the end of the show, the play, or the film. And Robin Redbreast, I think, you know, could be accused of doing that to a certain degree. It is a building atmosphere of sort of unease and perhaps threat, but you're not going to get any neat sort of wrapped up answers at the end, Brian.
Yes, that's right. It does the spooky elements well, but the explanations and the understanding of why this is strange and some of the things of what is going on, those come very late in this production, and some of it doesn't come at all.
Yes, this is true, yes. And goodness knows what those viewers thought who'd waited 2 months for the last 10 minutes of the play when they saw it in February 1971, I guess. Yeah, whether they felt it was worth the wait, I don't know. I suspect many would have been left feeling baffled or disappointed.
Yeah, and for me, I think the greatest weakness of this is some of the more strange things they just left too late in the production. I would have liked to have seen some elements of that coming in a little earlier.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It does sort of rush things towards the end, having established her, you know, early on, settling into this home and getting used to village life, and to some of the strangers or strange characters that she meets. What else did you like or dislike about this production, Brian?
As we've said, there were some good performances here. I liked some of the interactions of the characters that gave us this sort of contrast between Nora's character and Rob, who is this sort of younger, more innocent character, and also Nora and the other characters from the village. Getting those sort of bits of contrast and the slow reveal about how they related to each other. That was quite nice.
Yes, there is some good work there. I mean, I particularly like scenes between Anna Cropper as Nora and Bernard Hepton as Fisher. That's a great pairing on screen, and they produce some great stuff. So yeah, interesting stuff. There is some weirdness in there. It builds atmosphere, I think, as it goes along. It doesn't explain stuff. We're left trying to figure out things a lot, much as we were, I guess, when we watched Red Shift, I think, Brian.
Yes. And I did like some of the strangeness and spookiness in Robin Redbreast, but what it lacked was the sort of bizarre things that tied into why this was happening that we had in Redshift. And I would have liked to have seen a bit more of the elements from the end being a bit more prominent. So, yeah, in some ways, this one was a little bit too opaque in a way that Redshift, yes, it was certainly very strange and opaque, but it brought those interesting elements out in a way that I preferred.
Okay. Can I just compliment the BFI on the lovely package of the DVD and the box and a very comprehensive notes booklet featuring articles and interviews and technical details about the show. I'm a sucker for this sort of stuff from the BFI, and this was a really nice package, I thought.
Yes, whenever we see a release of something coming out from the BFI, sometimes they're a little bit more expensive, but we always get a very good package. They give us the best image and audio quality that we can get from the existing source material, and they go out of their way to give good extras and supporting materials as part of the package. So those BFI releases are always very nice.
Yes, indeed. Terrific stuff. So I guess it's recommendations time, Brian. I think I went first last time, so I'm going to throw the ball to you. Hopefully not a hospital pass. I suspect the listeners can work it out, but what would your recommendation be about this DVD set of Robin Redbreast?
Okay, this is a slightly tricky one because it is very well done and has some interesting things with it, and also is bizarre in a way that I like, but holds back a little bit too much. So this is a sort of neutral one for me. If you are really enjoying folk horror and these strange sorts of things, and you like that sort of modern urban character meets the country life, if you like those sorts of things and you're really looking for them, then absolutely take a look at this. If, on the other hand, you're not particularly into folk horror or you're just getting into it, I would recommend going with either The Wicker Man or possibly Redshift, although it's very bizarre. It's layered and has lots of stuff for multiple watchings. I would lean towards looking at those before coming to Robin Redbreast.
Okay, interesting stuff. I'm going to give it a hearty recommendation because I really enjoyed Robin Redbreast and all the sort of associated material that came with the BFI release. The only warning I would say is don't go into it expecting answers and clear-cut conclusions. It will leave you thinking rather than actually wrapping things up neatly for you. But I'm a sucker for all this 70s spooky, either the ghost stories or the folk horror stories, and this was right up my alley. And I would recommend Robin Redbreast on DVD. And I'd also just mention again that hopefully we will get to talk about its companion piece, Dead of Night, at some point in the future. So stay tuned to British Invaders, everybody.
Okay, very good. In summary, Robin Redbreast features the character of Nora Palmer, who is this young, modern woman who is very independent. She's a television script editor, a professional, and after the end of a relationship, she has decided to move full-time to this country home that was originally thought of as a getaway. She's now moving to it full time and is encountering this very different country life, and encounters a number of the local people there, with Rob, who's this young man who she starts a new relationship with, and then these older characters who are very strange and doing odd and mysterious things, with the housekeeper, Mrs. Vigo, and Fisher, this enigmatic local historian. And we get into more and more tense things where she finds herself cut off from the city and from her friends when her phone stops working, then her car stops working. And stranger and more menacing things start happening, and there are questions of her security when it looked like someone may have been on her roof, and so on. And we move towards a strange and intense conclusion.
Very good indeed. And after that, do come back next time. We're staying with some slightly bleak British countryside, but we're in the 1980s this time. A BBC show, 1983, called The Mad Death. And it's another show that deals with society's fears at the time. It's a show about rabies. Again, some interesting stuff to talk about when we come back, Brian.
Yes, that's an interesting one. And it has sort of apocalyptic elements to it as well. So, very interesting show. We'll look forward to talking about that one. But until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can join in on some of the discussions we're having there, which are always interesting.
Absolutely. Come and join the fun. Or join us on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com, where British Invaders is a proud member. VogNetwork.com.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us. And until next time, it's me, Eamon, in England, suggesting that you be careful about seemingly harmless invitations to harvest festivals.